Good morning. It's good to see everybody out today. In the days of Jesus, the most feared soldiers on the face of the earth were those of the legions of Rome. And these men were practically invincible. It seemed that no nation of the day could stand against them. And one of the reasons that they were so powerful and so feared was because their armies were led by men known as centurions. And these centurions were seasoned veterans, and they were commanders of units of approximately 100 men. In today's army, they would roughly be the equivalent to a major. In the time of Jesus in Israel, there were two or three of these centurions that would have been based in the fortress inside of Jerusalem. But most of them were stationed at a seaport called Caesarea. And this is what the ruins of that look like today. You can make out one of the theaters and part of the Hippodrome, which was a racetrack for chariots, as well as the faint outline of the ancient harbor itself. But in the days of Jesus, it probably looked more like this. Because of how the nature of the coast of the Mediterranean Sea was, Israel didn't have any natural deep water seaports for ships. But Herod the Great built this one. And at the time, it was an engineering masterpiece of the day. And it became so important in sea trade that Rome took it over, and they made it, Caesarea, their capital in Israel. The city became a jewel on the Mediterranean, with a theater, an amphitheater, and a hippodrome as just a few of its attractions. This was where the majority of Rome's forces were stationed at. This city was also, being the capital, the place where Herod lived, or where Pilate lived. Now, we know that there are an active force here in this world today who hate Christianity, hate God, and hate the Bible. And many of these scholars are really who challenge every aspect of the scriptures, did the same thing because they could find no proof of Pilate ever being there. There was no records of Pontius Pilate ever being in Jerusalem, and the skeptics often laughed at Pilate that he was nothing more than a figment of the imagination of the gospel writers. But then someone found this huge stone at Caesarea with Pilate's name on it. And it reads Tiberium Pontius Pilate, prefect of Judea. Now in this next slide here, you'll see the palace where Pilate would have lived while stationed here in Caesarea. It was an elegant home that was originally decorated by Herod the Great as one of his palatial homes by the sea. So why is Caesarea important to our story this morning? Well, because it's very possible that the centurion at the foot of the cross had came from Caesarea. Again, Pilate didn't live in Jerusalem, and he probably didn't want to live in Jerusalem. He was very content to live 70 miles away in the comforts and the entertainments of Caesarea. The only reason he would have had to travel to Jerusalem would have been during one of the festivals, such as Passover or Pentecost, when a large number of Israelites would have gathered together. Now, the Jews, of course, hated the Romans, and the Romans felt the same way. The Romans soon learned, though, that at any time that a large number of Jews got together in one place, it became, at least for the Romans, a recipe for disaster. Unrest, riots, and possibly even the potential for a major revolt. Pilate, no doubt, didn't like the Jews any more than they liked him. But his job was to keep the peace, and that required him to display a show of force on occasion. So at these times, when the Jews gathered together, Pilate would often lead extra soldiers to Jerusalem. More soldiers required more centurions. And one of those centurions that would have came with Pilate could have been one of the ones that was standing guard at the base of the cross of Christ. So, who was this centurion? Well, really he was part of a very exclusive club. There was approximately 20 to 25 centurions in Israel at the time. I also found it a little bit interesting that despite the fact the Jews hated the Romans, the New Testament writers treated centurions with a lot of respect. We find in Matthew, the 8th chapter, beginning in verse 6, that when Jesus was ministering in Capernaum, a centurion approached him asking for help. And he said, "Lord, my servant is lying paralyzed at home, suffering terribly." And he said to him, "I will come and heal him." But the centurion replied, "Lord, I am not worthy to have you come under my roof, but only say the word, and my servant will be healed. For I too am a man under authority, with soldiers under me. And I say to one, go, and he goes, and to another, come, and he comes, and to my servant, do this, and he does it." When Jesus heard this, he marveled, and he said to those who followed him, "Truly I tell you, with no one in Israel have I found such faith. I tell you, many will come from the east and west and recline at the table with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven, while the sons of the kingdom will be thrown out into the outer darkness. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." And to the centurion Jesus said, "Go, let it be done for you as you have believed." And the servant was healed at that very moment. When it came time for Christianity to be spread to the Gentiles, it was a centurion named Cornelius who God sent Peter to preach to. Cornelius lived in Caesarea. Acts describes Cornelius as a centurion, an upright and God-fearing man, who was well spoken of by the whole Jewish nation, who was directed by a holy angel to send for you to come to his house and to hear what you have to say. Later in Acts 27:3, we're told of a centurion who had Paul as a prisoner. But in that passage, we're told that Julius, the name of the centurion, treated Paul kindly and gave him leave to go to his friends to be cared for. So it's obviously here that these centurions are highly regarded by the early church. And the reason why is these men were viewed favorably by Scripture is because that typically centurions were not your common soldiers. These men were chosen because of their level-headedness, their ability to be good leaders. They were chosen because they were dependable and because they understood their men. The Greek historian Polybius said that in choosing their centurions, the Romans looked not so much for the daring or the fire-eating type, but rather men who were natural leaders, who possess a stable and unflappable temperament, and not men who will open the battle and launch attacks, but those who will stand their ground, even when worsted or hard-pressed, and will die in defense of their posts. So these centurions were dependable and level-headed leaders, but they could also be very cruel when they needed to be. And that is why this centurion was at the base of the cross. He was carrying out a common task for a Roman soldier, the crucifixion of guilty men. Now, in that day, Rome was the only nation that crucified anyone. And they did it often, and they enjoyed doing it often. One scholar noted that Romans practiced both random and intentional violence against populations whom they had conquered, killing tens of thousands by crucifixion. Now, crucifixions were not jobs for the squeamish. Centurions had to stand watch while men died slowly and painfully on their crosses. When they crucified a man, the Romans flogged them first, and they beat the prisoners until bones were broken and blood covered the ground. The prisoner's arms was then tied to a crossbar, and they were paraded through the streets with a soldier walking out in front carrying a sign that indicated their various crimes. When they got to the place of the execution, the prisoner's wrists were then nailed to the crossbar. And then that bar was then lifted and placed on a stake, which had already been driven into the ground. And then the condemned man's ankles were nailed to the stake. Now, prisoners could remain like this, unconscious for days, struggling for breath as they hung by the nails in their wrists. And as they hung there, they experienced the pressure on their chests, having their arms suspended above them, and that robbed them of their ability to inhale. And so they would have to push upwards with their legs in order to breathe. But then again, the pain from the nails and the feet became so unbearable that they sagged and they hung by their arms. And again, they were back to not being able to breathe. And that would happen over and over and over again. And sometimes the Roman soldiers would shorten the suffering by breaking a prisoner's legs. With their legs broken, they could no longer support themselves to push up to breathe. And so they suffocated faster. Because of the stress on their diaphragms, prisoners could only talk in short bursts. And this is why, as Jesus hung on the cross, his statements were very brief. It was reported that one soldier who observed the crucifixion wrote this. He said, "Of all the sounds in hell, none is more wretched than those terrible cries through the silence of midnight, where crucified men hang in agony and cannot die while a breath of suffering remains." And centurions had to oversee this entire process, prisoner after prisoner after prisoner. Watching guilty men die was part of their job description. But Christ's death was different. There was something about Jesus that shook the centurion. And the question is, what was it about Jesus' death that was different? Well, we're not told exactly, but maybe a few ideas is number one, being a centurion made you part of a very exclusive club. Again, there was 20 to 25 of these commanders in Palestine, and it's a pretty good guess that they probably knew each other fairly well. And when one centurion went to Jesus and begged for his servant to be healed, you can count on the fact that that story became known to the others. And when Jesus spent 3 years of ministry going throughout Israel and healing the sick and the lame and the blind, that probably got talked about as the commanders sat and ate and drank together. But this centurion had a front row seat to something that the others didn't. He watched as Jesus was tried and convicted and executed. He watched as Pilate tried to release Jesus, not just once, but twice. He listened as Pilate declared, I find no fault in this man. He watched as Pilate brought out a bowl of water and washed his hands of what everyone knew was an unjust sentence. This centurion had crucified many other men, but this man was innocent. And as he watched, as John 19:1 says, that Pilate took Jesus and flogged him. And as he watched again, as the soldiers led him away inside the palace, that is the governor's headquarters, and they called together the whole battalion, and they clothed him in a purple cloak, and twisting together a crown of thorns, they put it on him. And they began to salute him, "Hail, King of the Jews." And they were striking his head with a reed and spitting on him and kneeling down in homage to him. And when they mocked him, they stripped him of his purple cloak and put his own clothes on him. And they led him out to be crucified. Now, this centurion no doubt seen all of that. And at the cross, as was his command, as the soldiers drove the nails into Jesus' hands and feet, he was there when they lifted that crossbar and dropped it into place and watched Jesus' body sag against the nails that held him in place. And as the centurion watched all this, he knew it wasn't fair. He knew it wasn't right, that it shouldn't have happened. It shouldn't have happened to a normal innocent man. But Jesus wasn't a normal man. And this centurion knew that. This centurion, again, had heard the stories about Jesus. No doubt how Jesus had been kind to the weak, how he had fed thousands of people with just a little bit of fish and bread, how he had healed the sick and the lame, and how he was even said to have raised the dead back to life. But then we read this passage in Mark 15 where it tells us that when the sixth hour had come, there was darkness over the whole land until the ninth hour. And at the ninth hour, Jesus cried with a loud voice, "Eloi, Eloi, lema sabachthani," which means, my God, why have you forsaken me?" And then down in verse 37, it says that Jesus uttered a loud cry and breathed his last. And then the curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. And when the centurion who stood facing him saw that, he had breathed his last. He said, "Truly, this man was the Son of God." There was something about the way that Jesus breathed his last that shook this centurion. He had seen countless of other men die, but no mortal man had ever died like this. The story of the centurion at the foot of the cross is mentioned in all three Gospels. There was something about the story of this pagan Roman soldier's reaction that God wanted us to see. God wanted us to see the impact of Christ's death that it had on this centurion that would lead him to recognize the truth about Christ, that truly this was the Son of God. Now, back in 1976, there was an 8-hour TV miniseries titled Jesus of Nazareth. You might still be able to catch that around Easter time. It starred Robert Powell as Jesus and Olivia Hussey as his mother Mary and Anne Bancroft as Mary Magdalene. And for the role of the centurion, they picked the seasoned actor Ernest Borgnine. Borgnine was highly respected at this time, having acted in countless comedies and drama, but he took this role seriously. He said that the weather for the filming of the day had been chilly and gray, and since the camera was focused on Borgnine at the foot of the cross, it wasn't necessary for Robert Powell, who portrayed Jesus, to be there. And for him to focus for the role, the director placed an X on some scenery just beside the cameraman, and he told Borgnine to focus on that as if he was looking at the face of Christ. Borgnine said for some reason he was nervous and pretty uneasy that day, and he asked for someone to read from the Bible the words Jesus said as he hung on the cross. And so the director found a Bible and he opened to the book of Luke and signaled for the camera to start rolling as he began to read the text. And Borgnine said as he stared up at that chalk mark, he was trying to think about what might have gone on through that centurion's mind that fateful day. And as he stood there saying that, he heard the words of Jesus to the one thief. Verily I say unto thee, today thou wilt be with me in paradise. He visualized that centurion thinking, if Jesus can forgive that criminal, surely he can forgive me. I will lay down my sword and retire to my little farm just outside of Rome. At this point, Borgnine wrote that then it happened. As I stared upward, instead of a chalk mark, I imagined the face of Jesus Christ. Lifelike and clear, it was the most beautiful, gentle form I'd ever known. Pain seared and sweat stained with blood flowing down from the thorns pressed deep. His face was still filled with compassion. He looked down at me through tragic, sorrowful eyes with an expression of love beyond description. Then his cry arose against a desert wind. The voice of the director reading from the Bible, Father, into thy hands I commit my spirit. Borgnine said that I imagined Jesus' head slumped to one side, and I knew he was dead. A terrible grief welled up within me, and completely oblivious to the camera, I began sobbing uncontrollably. The director yelled, cut, and Borgnine looked over and seen that Olivia Hussey and Anne Bancroft were crying too. He said, as I wiped my eyes, I looked up again to where I had imagined Jesus, and he was gone. Borgnine closed with these comments. He said, I have not been quite the same person since. I believe that I take my faith more seriously. I like to think that I am far more forgiving than I used to be. As that centurion learned 2,000 years ago, I too have found that you simply cannot come close to Jesus without being changed. Well, this morning as we sit here in this building, we have an advantage that centurion never had. We have God's words in our hands. We have the Bible. We know things about Jesus and his sacrifice that pagan soldier would have never considered. But even sometimes then, we have a problem. Sometimes we don't see Jesus. We don't understand or feel what he went through on that cross for us. Sometimes we get caught up in life and we often don't take the time to think about Jesus on the cross. Now, of course, that's the reason why we take communion every Sunday, to remind us of the sacrifice he made for us. But we have to be careful that we don't let anything cloud our vision so that we don't see Christ. There is one advantage that the centurion had over many churchgoers. That centurion was able to see Jesus as he really was. This morning, the invitation is for those that have not came to Christ. There is, again, the idea that you have to have your life totally in order before you can give your life to God. But that's not really what we find in the New Testament. We find people that are very much still in their mess when they do come to God. And then things begin to turn around. And so this morning, if you're waiting to become perfect, you're going to be waiting for a very long time. The perfecting process, God takes care of that. But again, first, you must belong to God. And we encourage you to make that decision as together we stand and we sing.